Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Former Titan Scout for 19 years is Blake Bedingfield. And speaking of 19 years ago today, the Music City Miracle. What's up, Blake?
How's everybody doing?
Wonderful. Good to have you in.
Where were you sitting for the Music City Miracle?
I was up in the press box,
right
probably
behind me,
probably near you. And
were you banging on the table inappropriately?
You know, actually, I was standing up because I had gathered my stuff together to get out of there after what I thought was going to just be a kickoff and a down and try to heave the ball up. But actually took out a reporter because I was moving with the ball, going right from left with the ball. And there was some reporter standing there, and I can't remember who he was with, but I started moving with the football and actually kind of ran him over as Kevin Dyson ran into the end zone. I didn't look back to see who it was.
I was on Paul. I was on the field.
It was so not Paul.
I didn't get to see your celebration. We were allowed on the field for the last 2 minutes there before Jerry Gray ruined it for everybody.
That's right.
Big baby.
615-737-1045, our number. We give the number because you can chime in on either the Titans offensive coordinator search now, where we're talking more about fit than anything else, fit with the system and with the quarterback. And we'll also talk national championship. And let's start there, Blake, because you have scouted both programs for a long time. What's your initial takeaway of what Clemson did to Alabama last night?
You know, not the way I expected the game to go. The initial scoring back and forth when it was 14-13, kind of expected that. Both of them have offenses that can make big plays down the field. You know, I didn't really expect the turnover from Tua, especially on a misread in the coverage. That was an excellent play by the defense of Clemson. But Clemson was zoned in. They were locked in from the beginning of the game, and Alabama was playing catch-up, and that's not a position that they're usually in. And they looked really uncomfortable yesterday. They looked uncomfortable on offense. Tua had looked uncomfortable in the pocket, not necessarily from the pass rush, but just some of the plays that were being called in the games that was a little bit different than during the year. The defense really had no answer. They had a couple of stops early, but you know, when Trevor Lawrence got on and they couldn't get to the quarterback and put pressure on him, he had his way back there.
Chad, I didn't send this to you, but Paul was up unusually late last night, so I sent him a text. Clemson dealt Nick Saban his first loss by 21 or more points since week 15 of the 2006 NFL season.
And I think I read this. He's not lost by more than 14 his entire time at Alabama.
That's an amazing stat. When you think of
it's unbelievable.
Not to have a
when you think
game.
About that.
It's crazy.
What do you think about Trevor Lawrence?
You know, Trevor is, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when Jonathan and I were on the radio here. I mean, he's the 1-1 in the draft in 2 years. I mean, he is the prototypical size, but he's a good enough athlete. He's got a quick release. He's got excellent arm strength, but he has a feel in the pocket. He's very comfortable, very patient. And this is an 18, 19-year-old young man that is just kind of feeling his way. Now, he has excellent playmakers on the outside that he's going to be able to grow with over the next couple of years. But, you know, that's a big part of it. He trusts his receivers. Even last night, a couple of times, he would stare down receivers. But they were beating the defensive backs one-on-one. They were making plays. It was a physical game, and Alabama's defensive backs didn't match the physicality of the receivers for Clemson. Clemson's DBs were getting physical with Alabama's, and they didn't like it. There were very few penalties called for pass interference, and Clemson took advantage of it. Alabama did not look at that and say, well, we got to do that too. They actually played off coverage, off man coverage a number of times, and the Clemson receivers took advantage.
Blake, I think people will say, and they're right, there were some catches last night that were excellent by Clemson wide receivers. But from a scout's perspective, give us the throws that you see that freshman make that puts him already up in that upper tier of quarterbacks that everyone's going to covet.
You know, I always like to see the outside the number throws, especially near the sideline, how he can pinpoint those throws. There were a couple last night when there was a DB trailing. Now, the DBs at Alabama are taught a little bit different than a lot of different teams. They are taught to play through the receiver's hands, not necessarily look for the ball unless they're already there on coverage. So they turn usually late for the ball. And Clemson took advantage of that. And that young quarterback knew that technique and was throwing to the receiver's hands. But his accuracy was what was amazing. There were a couple of crossing routes in the middle of the field where he hit them in stride, and they took off running with it.
And he's not afraid to stand in the pocket and take a hit.
And he's not afraid to step up in the pocket. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one of the things you saw last night on a big throw downfield, that he actually saw the rush coming behind him to the side, and he stepped up one step. And that's a veteran quarterback move for an 18, 19-year-old to step up in the pocket and deliver downfield, knowing that a linebacker may be in his chin.
Now, one thing you can't figure out just off of one season watching on TV is whether or not he's a field general yet, right?
You know, that's tough. That's part of the scouting. When you go to practice and watch him practice, you go to games and stand on the sidelines before a game, how he interacts with the team. Does the team respond to him as a leader? You watch him throughout the game from the press box, usually where scouts sit, and you watch his command of the team, command of the huddle. Those are things that you get from a live game view that you don't necessarily get by watching tape. But he looked very much in charge. You watch, even from a TV view, you watch the players kind of rally around him, you know, when he makes a play. But he never got too big for himself. He made a big throw. He stayed calm. He stayed patient. The other players on offense kind of feed off that and that comfort level that he has, even though he was just a freshman.
What'd you make of Saban's comments going into halftime where he said he had not seen that offense from Clemson before?
You know, he stopped himself when he said they are doing things that we haven't, and he stopped. And he goes, they are copying what other teams
said
have
some
done
against
us.
Stuff, yeah.
Some copycat stuff. And that was a little bit alarming walking into half with him thinking that way, because, you know, if you haven't, that's an old NFL coaching mentality of, we are preparing a game plan based on what we see on film only. You have to be able to adapt in games, and walking into half, and I didn't see it, him saying those words out loud was a little bit alarming if you're watching it as an Alabama fan, because you didn't really think at that point he had that in his mind of how he was going to make those changes. And coming out of the second half, they didn't. They didn't score a point in the second half. That was ball game.
Always asking for comps when I have access to a scout. If I force you to give me a Lawrence comp.
You know, watching him, it's funny because I started to see a little bit of Drew Bledsoe, but he's got much better athleticism than Drew Bledsoe. The feet, I'm talking about the throw, the arm, the way he throws. He does move in the pocket much better. He can run and escape downfield, but the way he moves and steps up in the pocket, you see a little bit of Bledsoe, a little bit of Roethlisberger, not necessarily the toughness where they're dragging on him. You haven't seen a lot of that yet, but some of those quarterbacks like that, the big, tall, 6'5", he's now 220. He's probably going to be 230, pushing 235 when he's out of there. But those quarterbacks are the ones that I saw when I watch him. And he's got the excellent quick release, too, which is what Drew Bledsoe had.
And I think people forget that Bledsoe could really deliver the ball. People think about Bledsoe now, and they think about the end, not the prime.
No question. And, you know, you see a little bit of the demeanor more of like a Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer was just very calm and relaxed and never seemed like he was pressured in games. And that's the way he looked, too. So, you know, those are excellent comps for him, the 6'5", 230-pound quarterback. And if he can just continue on through his career. You know, this is a freshman. He's got two more years to play. There's been a lot of excellent freshman quarterbacks that have come out. Remember Christian Hackenberg? I mean, Christian Hackenberg was set the world on fire at Penn State his freshman year, and now he's no longer in the NFL. He was drafted in 2016, the second round. He's no longer around. It's what do you do with it now? You know, now he's going to lose his left tackle. He's going to lose, I believe, his center. He's going to have players around him go down. How's he going to perform without those players around him? You know, is the defense going to be as stout? Is he going to have to score more points because they're losing that excellent defensive line? How are they replacing those players? So those are things that over the next 2 years you're going to see. How does he handle that? Does he, you know, take this national championship and rest on his laurels? He doesn't seem like that type of kid, doesn't seem like that kind of player. But maybe he does, and then he doesn't perform as a second-year player.
Hackenberg, I think, was great under O'Brien and then regressed under James Franklin, right, when he got there, I think was the progression, right?
No question about it. If you look at Christian Hackenberg, you're talking about a 6'4", 230-pound athletic quarterback with a strong arm.
I think number one player in the country, just like Trevor Lawrence, was
no
number
question.
One quarterback.
and he's no longer in the NFL, not even on a practice squad.
What do you think about T. Higgins? Because he's a guy of local interest from Oak Ridge.
You know, I like both of their young receivers. I mean, both of them are excellent, whether it's T. Higgins or Austin. I mean, you're talking about two big, long, not only athletic, but strong receivers. This is a group that they look like juniors and seniors. I mean, they look like veteran-type players along with Lawrence. I mean, these are guys that are coming in ready-made, genetically made to play in the high levels of college football right off the bat. But I really like his athleticism. You saw the reach on the big pass across the middle. I mean, those guys have outstanding width, but they also have the hands to make the catches.
It's kind of not unlike Vrabel getting a head coaching job here off a year where there were injuries in Houston, but his unit didn't rank particularly well. It seems teams are willing to get in early instead of getting in late on a guy that they like his personality, like his sales pitch, and like maybe what he's presenting for the guys that are on board. What do you think of him with Rodgers? Obviously a very, very established guy as opposed to a guy who needs growth.
You know, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a top 5-6 quarterback in the league. I mean, he's a premier guy. He's coming toward the end. Now we're talking about a 35-year-old quarterback. How much more does he have? What's the longevity? He had a knee injury this year that kind of hurt him toward the middle to the late part of the year. Does this offense, the personnel that they have in place, fit what the Rams were doing and what they were trying to do with the Titans? Can't necessarily say it does. They don't have the big playmakers on the outside. Offensive line is adequate, which is fine. But the receivers they have Davante Adams. You know, they have some guys in place. They don't have the running game. And if you look at the Rams and what they're doing successfully, they're really successful when Todd Gurley was healthy. When Todd Gurley was injured toward the end of the year, there was a little bit of a drop-off from Goff as well, starting to have some questions. When was the Titans most successful on offense? When Derrick Henry started to get going. And that's what they don't have in Green Bay. They don't have that running game. They don't have the running back that you're going to be able to play off of, but they do have an elite level quarterback.
I mentioned the quarterbacks that, you know, he's likely to mention, why wouldn't he, in some of the interviews that he's had, the interview here and the interview in Green Bay, for instance, and how you compare that with Rodgers. But I think the one area he could take away from this year and use and add to his resume is the completion percentage. Because Next Gen Stats put out that LaFleur's Titans had the highest expected completion percentage in the NFL last season, while the Packers ranked 27th in that. So if you're looking to rein in Rodgers a bit offensively, he could certainly sell that style, right?
Sure, no question. I mean, everybody wants a ball control type offense, whether it's through the run or through the air. But you don't want the ball on the ground very much. You don't want to put yourself in negative yard situations. So the high completion percentage is part of that. And Marcus did have a very good year. I mean, he's always had I've always thought, very accurate arm, very accurate
for those
eye.
Wondering, Breeze normally leads that category.
No question. Yeah.
With the quick passing and the completion percentage when it comes to what's expected from their offense.
But a lot of that offense, too, the completion percentage goes up with a lot of the screen game.
Yeah.
You know, who was
yeah.
the second leading receiver on the team, which was Deion Lewis in receptions. Those are short passes, high percentage type passes. Gurley gets a lot of balls with Breeze situation, Alvin Kamara, those type, Darren Sproles way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are high percentage passes, which is going to up that completion percentage.
Yeah, David Carr once upon a time had a massive completion percentage because they're trying not to get him killed. He was throwing everything at the line of scrimmage,
well,
right, in Houston.
I mean, you even come out of college, one of Paul's favorite quarterbacks, Vince Young, was a high completion percentage guy coming out of Texas, but he's doing a lot of dinking and dunking. Yes, College Football Hall of Famer.
You and I were talking last night. You said Marcus isn't going to have a problem learning a new offense because Marcus is very experienced at learning new offense. Nevertheless, it takes him away from not spending time learning a new offense and spending time delving further into the things he learned last year. So it's time spent, again, learning whatever the new language is, learning the new nuances of the new guy's stuff.
Yeah, what is Marcus going to be doing in February, March, and April? He's going to be rehabbing an injury, okay, and he's going to be learning a brand new system, terminology, new coach, new offense coordinator may want a new quarterback coach. There may be some turnover if LaFleur takes some offensive coaches, so there's new people to be around. The one thing you want to see in the quarterback when you draft someone is the continuity, the consistency. You want to be able to grow in a system. And what I mean by that is maybe you have an offensive system in place that fits your quarterback skill set. And then every year you tweak it to see what he's doing better. As he grows and matures as a quarterback, maybe he grows within the offense and you can start opening up things, or you close some doors and say, we're just not going to do this anymore. That's unfortunately not what he's been able to do. I remember when we drafted Marcus 5 years ago, okay, sitting on a plane, flying back with the head coach, general manager, offense coordinator from Oregon, and we're flying back to Nashville. One of the things I said was, if we get a chance to draft this guy, the one thing we have to do is just not screw him up by changing coordinators every year. Well, you know, unfortunately, this is year five, and he's got five. And
it's Groundhog Day for him.
It is. And, you know, I hate that for him. I really do, because you're really not getting to see him at should start at the prime of his career in a system for the longevity. Is he going to learn it? Yes, he's smart. He can learn any system. It will take time for others now to learn the system, because not everyone has that mental capability of Marcus. Marcus can learn something.
Corey, Taewon, no,
Jonnu Smith. I mean,
easier
those guys.
For running backs?
You know, yes. I mean, it depends. Are they going to change from a zone scheme to a power scheme? I mean, this is going to be up in the air now. I'm sure they want to keep things as simple as possible, but you're talking about terminology and language that they're going to have to learn, and you just started to see a comfort level at times at the end of the year, and you're not going to have that now.
The indication I've gotten is they'd like to stick with a similar system. Now, you know, you get bowled over by an interview by a coordinator who wants, you know, is in line with Vrabel on everything except he wants power instead of zone, and you know, maybe he sells them on it. Who knows how it goes?
Well, I remember when we had Ken Wisenhunt, and he was fired early part of the season, and Malarkey took over. You know, that was some different terminology, even for Malarkey. It wasn't something that, you know, if he was going to be the coordinator, it's not something he was used to calling. And I remember having that conversation with him. And Jason Michael stayed on and became the coordinator and the play caller, and Malarkey was the head coach. But, you know, even a young coach, you're talking about a young coach that comes without play calling experience. Maybe he grew up in a Ram system, so to speak, and now he has to learn different terminology for someone who's never called a play before. It's very difficult for a veteran to change the terminology that he's used to. Very, very difficult for someone that is going to be a first-year play caller.
1045thezone.com, your home for The Zone online. Online. Read the Big Six blog. Register for contests. Find out when we'll be in your area. And catch up anything you might have missed with the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical podcast. Find out how to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Download our mobile app and listen online. You'll find everything you need to keep up with The Zone. All in one place. At 1045thezone.com.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Blake Bedingfield in studio with us. Blake, we were talking about the system for LaFleur. Did you think that system paired well with Mariota as a quarterback?
I think it did. I mean, I think Marcus is able to do a number of systems, but I thought that system was really going to fit him well once they got the running game going. You know,
right.
once they got Deion Lewis out of being the main focal point of the run game and added Derek and the threat of the play action. Marcus is a very good play action quarterback. That is undervalued in some of the things he can do. Not only is he good at hiding the ball in play action, but he can also boot off of it and use his legs and athleticism to get outside the pocket. So, you know, he's very good in that role. Doesn't work when you don't have a run game. So, you know, I thought that system was going to fit him really well. He's a tight end, short intermediate, centric passer anyway. That's really where he's going to have his most success and then take a couple of shots downfield. But adding the screen game in this year, I thought was a big plus for him. It's something the Titans, during my time there, we never did well with
maybe,
the screen game.
Maybe you don't have a great sense of this for something that was going on downstairs, if not say so. But Fisher, Munchak, Wisenhunt, Malarkey, what was their thinking on if somebody requested to interview or take one of their guys for a better job.
You know, I remember Jeff was always willing to allow his coaches to take that opportunity. Go interview, get the opportunity to interview. You know, Jim Schwartz was a young coach on our staff. He came in as a defensive quality control guy the same time I came in. And next year he got bumped up to linebackers coach and then right to defensive coordinator. And part of that was other teams had started to poke around and got interested in him. And, you know, Jeff was going to allow it, but he also didn't want to lose somebody that he had in mind. And then when Greg Williams left to go be the head coach, he took Jerry Gray, who was probably going to be the next Stevens coordinator, took Jerry Gray with him, and he elevated Schwartzy into that role. So, you know, those are things that Jeff was allowing people, like when Greg left, to take Jerry Gray, who had been on staff for a number of years, but had that person already in mind in Jim Schwartz. So not only do you protect yourself by having somebody on staff, but, you know, you allow people to leave when they get a promotion or an opportunity to further themselves.
We played this game earlier. So LaFleur presumably calls his own plays in Green Bay. Say he wants Arthur Smith to come. He gives him the offensive coordinator title, but he's not calling plays. Arthur Smith coaches tight ends in Green Bay. He wants him to coach tight ends in Green Bay and gives him the offensive coordinator title, which obviously raises his profile. And we were batting this around. Now, obviously, you would be letting him climb the ladder, but if you're Mike Vrabel, you also need to preserve Tennessee Titans, and Arthur Smith's done a pretty good job with tight ends here. How do you envision him sorting through something like that? What would you do?
You know, I even look at it further. Arthur Smith has paid his dues. Now, this is a guy that put in a number of years as like an offensive quality control person, never really pushed the envelope. On trying to leave, stay loyal to the organization. This is a situation where the organization needs to stay loyal to him. Arthur's a very bright coach. He's very smart. Never one to rock the boat or anything like that. But he's got a future as he continues on. And if a LaFleur can give him a title to give him a bump and, start to put him on the map in terms of being a head coach later on in his career, you know, that's a big thing. But, you know, is he ready to call plays? Has he been in that situation? Well,
no, we're saying non-play.
No, I'm talking about, if the Titans, you know, put him in a situation where they give him a title, what is that title going to be? Assistant offense coordinator, run game coordinator? Maybe, you know, maybe you give him a run game coordinator, but now the new guy you're bringing in has that in place. So that's the tough thing about keeping him with the Titans if they're going to give him an outright offense coordinator title in Green Bay. But the Arthur Smiths of the world need to be taken care of by an organization because he is young, he is bright, and he's paid his dues and put in his time.
So you got to give him something really big or you got to let him go.
I think so, no question about it.
Well, is that a guy you consider for offensive coordinator?
You know, I don't know if Arthur has been in the building the last few years and put himself in that situation where, you know, even LaFleur coming here, he kind of put himself in that position with the Rams, you know, learning how to call plays. There's not only calling plays on Sunday, but how to devise a game plan. You know, Arthur's always been good of, you know, as a tight end coach, you're always working with the offensive line coach as well. So he understands blocking schemes very well and how they're trying to block fronts, whether it's a 3-4 or 4-3, it doesn't matter. That's a big part of the tight end coach. But, you know, how much was he involved in game planning for the run game? Probably more the run game than the passing game because of his work with the tight ends and blocking, that type of thing. So, you know, has he done that? I'm not quite sure, but you need to have had some trial runs before you just jump out there on Sunday and call plays.
This is a bigger discussion we were having earlier, Blake, so I'll ask you to kind of chime in on this, just in general. And, you know, regardless of if it's upward mobility or whatever it may be, maybe it's upward mobility, maybe it's, hey, I know Matt LaFleur, I came in with him, I want to go coach with him now in Green Bay. Whatever the reason, if you are a head coach and guy on your staff wants to go somewhere else, wants to interview somewhere else, if you say no because they're under contract, you're around the circle of coaches a lot of times. Does that hurt you with the next guy you may hire? Because as we know, coaches talk constantly.
I think it can, you know, but also my goal would be to do what's best for my team. And if I really don't have a replacement at a certain position already in place, and I'm having to go out and search now for other coaches, I'm not letting you out of the contract either. That's why you signed it. That's why I gave it to you. I'm not letting you go. I'm trying to win ball games, especially, you know, coming off a year where I didn't go to the playoffs and I'm really trying to get there. So, you know, I would just say sorry, but, you know, you took the job and you got a contract and you're going to stick with me. But, you know, to answer your question, does it hurt down the road? Sure. But also he's showing loyalty to that person too. He's not, you know, he gave him the job. He gave him the multi-year contract. You know, there is some loyalty there that both sides need to have. You know, if they're a coach that you have under contract and you may don't care that he leaves, mm-hmm. then go ahead and let him go and upgrade that position with someone else.
Reed is in Dallas. He's next up.
You're going to love this guy. He's a prince.
What's up, Reed?
Hey, guys. Hey, let me throw a name at you guys. Dan Rauser, offensive line coordinator for the New Orleans Saints, makes a lot of sense to me. Over the last 3 years, his offensive lines have ranked in the top five. His development with the power back of Ingram and the scat back of Kamara matches with what the Titans have. And also the development with Ryan Ramczyk. I think Dennis Kelly is a potential Pro Bowler. He deserves to start on this team. They're going to move Conklin as guard. I see him upgrading the center position this year. So I think the offensive line transformation should be huge this year. I think the ideal pick would be Dan Rauser from New Orleans. What's your take?
You want him as a play caller?
Yes, offensive coordinator. You got it.
I don't know. Blake, you tell me. I haven't seen too many offensive line coaches turn into play callers. They turn into run game coordinators more often. But you recall any Munchak, you know, turned into a run game coordinator? He was talked about a couple times as an offensive coordinator.
I think Joe Philbin is one that was an offensive line coach that turned into a coordinator, turned into a head coach. But, you know, that just is one that has come to mind.
More often it's a passing game.
More often it's a quarterback coach, receivers coach, that type of thing. But, you know, you look at who he's talking about down in New Orleans, he's had a lot of influence, not only what he's talking about teaching the offensive line too, but they've drafted a number of high level offensive linemen down there in the high rounds. That's an offensive line coach that's getting things done behind the scenes in free agency and in the draft. He's getting things. So he's got a lot more power. The perception is he has a lot more power because of those high draft choices too. That he has a voice in that room, and I know he's got a voice in that room. So, you know, he's done a very good job with that team. And, you know, to his point, when you have a quarterback like a Drew Brees and, you know, you've got a 6 foot tall quarterback, there are a lot of things on that offensive line that have to be done, designed to give him passing lanes. And I think he's done an excellent job. Now, a lot of that's Drew Brees, but a lot of that's the way the offensive line coach has meshed with the rest of the offense. Whether he's called plays or not, I'm not quite sure. I just, from afar looking at it, and I see he's got power in free agency in the draft, and also what he's done with Drew Brees in the passing game. So there's been a lot of positives there as well.
And a quick congratulations to Reed. Actually got in, got out, asked a somewhat reasonable question. Didn't boss around a 19-year scout from the NFL. Reed, you know.
Well done, Reed.
It wasn't horrific.
Growth.
Well, do you like
growth
his,
is what we just
do you like
witnessed.
His idea of moving Conklin inside? This is an offense that I felt like, Blake, was not nearly as physical enough up front. And Vrabel is certainly a physical type coach, right? Like he yes. wants both offensively and defensively up front to be very physical. Yep. And how much can you help yourself by moving Conklin inside and putting Kelly at right tackle?
You know, here's the thing. Jack Conklin is a tackle, and he sees himself as a tackle. He's going to go into a year where he's going to have his fifth-year option come up, and is he going to want that as a guard? Is he going to want that's a big drop-off financially. I know his agent's not going to want it. He's going to want that tackle fifth-year option. He's not going to want a guard fifth-year option. I don't know how that's all going to work out from a financial standpoint, especially when he comes up to free agency, too. It's a lot less to pay for a guard than it is a tackle. So there's some financial ramifications coming in, not only from the team aspect of saying, well, Kelly and Conklin and the other group make our best five. Well, they probably do, but you got to have Jack buy in. Now, Jack has always been a team type guy, so
but he's not excited about it.
I would think he's not excited about it, especially with you're talking about year one. That may work. You know, we had Taylor Lewan drafted, right. And he played right tackle, for goodness sakes.
But then he was all pro,
and then he was right. So Dennis Kelly's a nice player, guys. I mean, Pro Bowl level. I don't see it. I think he's solid. I think he can start in the league. Is he an upper level tackle starter? I don't see that, but you know, I think Jack's a nice player too. Dropping him into guard would probably give you your best five.
The Wake Up Zone, midday 180, 3HL. And now, the Big Six, non-stop sports talk. Every weekday from 6 a.m. till 7 p.m. 104.5 The Zone.
So Matt LaFleur was the first coach hired this offseason by the Green Bay Packers. His presser will be tomorrow. Four-year contract, according to NFL Network, with a fifth-year option for the Packers. Also reports coming out that Bruce Arians is the next head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Could he be in some trouble, Blake, because he's on that advisory panel, and he pledged to the advisory panel that he would not be coming back in.
Seems kind of.
Does he screw over the people he's advising them to hire by taking one of the jobs?
Seems like he does a little bit. I mean, that's a, you know, and I think he also came out and said, I think the Browns were the only job that he'd really consider, you know, at this time.
But he's buddies with Jason Light.
Yeah, and then Jason Light's coming toward the end. You know, you're talking about he survived this year. They gave him a one-year extension, but he's got a one-year extension. So Bruce is going to try to resurrect James Winston and save Light. From being let go. And, you know, it's kind of an odd fit. But there's a lot of odd things that go on in the league now. I mean, you're starting to, you know, Steve Wilks is barely in Arizona for a month. Not even sure he even had a chance to buy a house, and now he's gone. But the GM and owner are still in place. And it's a different league than it was even 5 to 7 years ago. There's all these questionable hires, and Bruce will come in and probably resurrect the offense a little bit. They have some pieces in place, but who's he going to get on staff? That's important, because you're talking about a general manager. It's got a 1 year contract. I don't know how many Bruce has, but you know, if he's tied to the general manager, who's going to want to join that staff? You know, Bruce has also had some health issues that, you know, one of the reasons he supposedly left Arizona.
He went to the hospital as part of his interview. Like, he got checked out.
Oh.
Because he's had a couple rounds of cancer.
Every coach has to be thinking short term, though, even with the GM contract. In 12 months, there have been 15 NFL head coaching jobs open, including Arizona twice.
It's crazy.
Some news coming down from Vanderbilt. This from Chris Lee, VandySports.com. Great news for the Commodores. Both running back Keyshawn Vaughn and tight end Jared Pinkney are enrolled for spring semester at Vandy, and Chris Lee reporting both likely to come back. Both are redshirt juniors. They have until January 14th to declare for the draft, but Chris Lee reporting both enrolled in second semester of school and both training to come back to Vanderbilt. Those are two really good players that we saw this past year for Vandy. That's obviously, Blake, you got a chance to see them play, a big boost for the Commodores if they come back.
You know, I think so. I think both of them coming back was probably the smart decision, too. This is a good tight end draft, so Pinkney would, you know, be competing with a lot of good tight ends. And Vaughn just needs to show that he can stay healthy during the season. He has those flash plays where he has some excellent yards and big yardage games, but he's also been a low carry guy, too, if you look in games. I mean, you're talking about the 12, 13, 14 carries. Now, he may have 200 yards on those 14 carries, but he needs to show that he can stay healthy, not get his dinged up, and duplicate what he did this past year and add to it.
We don't know who Vandy's quarterback's going to be, because we know that Shermer's gone. He'll probably get drafted somewhere or be in camp with someone. That would be my question with Keyshawn Vaughn. Needs to stay healthy. Vandy limited his carries early on because he wasn't completely healthy. He was great when he got carries, but what does breaking in a new quarterback do for the amount of times Keyshawn Vaughn's going to need to touch the football? And then how does that adversely affect his health if he's relied on as much as we think he'll be relied on at Vandy next year?
You know, I think he's got to just show that he can stay healthy. And, you know, if he's going to be one of those backs that's just always going to be dinged up, his draft status is going to be reflected in that anyway. Is he going to get drafted? Yes, because he has some big play potential. But, you know, he's one of those guys that you want to see finish a season. You want to see him start and finish, not go out with dings, because, you know, those things over a 20-game season in the NFL, when you're talking about preseason, you miss 3, 4, 5 games during the year, and you can't really have your backs do that. If you're relying on him to be the second back on an offense, you know, you're really going to want him on the field, and that's not a position you really want to have a third back to take that spot.
Let's go to Michael on line 2. What's up, Mike?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. It's been a long time since we've had a player with the hype and talent of, say, a Julio Jones and a Calvin Johnson. And I asked this in the morning show, but since Blake said this is a pretty opportune time, I think there's a huge, and I know those are generational players, don't get me wrong, and that's hard to find, but I think there's a huge shortage of players that I would categorize in between serviceable and generational. Guys that are just solid, get you 70 catches, 75 catches a year, sub, you know, right around the 1,000-yard mark. And I just don't understand why that there's such a shortage for it. It seems like as the drafts go, the wide receiver depth's getting less. I don't know if that's whether that's due to the read option, you know, evolving in college sports, more focusing on the quarterback and running back's ability and talents. Is it basketball making more money there? I just want to see what, Blake, what do you think about that? And it seems like for the Titans to get better, it seems like we got to pony up and, you know, either offer picks or compensation to get guys that we need to get Marcus Mariota some help. I just want to see what you thought. Thank you, sir.
You know, I think it used to be a thing 5-6 years ago where you wanted the big X receivers, the Julio Jones, the Calvin Johnsons. You're talking about the 6'3", 220-pound X receivers. That's no longer the case. I mean, teams are not afraid to play with multiple tight end sets. Look at the Eagles. I mean, Zach Ertz had over 100 catches this past year. Delanie Walker's been a leading receiver for the Titans for a number of years. So the tight ends are becoming more athletic. They're becoming less inline blockers and more spread out, split out, or, you know, more receiver-type tight ends. So they're becoming more effective in an offense. The smaller receivers are not, teams are not afraid to have a small slot receiver. Those slot receivers can get, even go outside now. You know, Antonio Brown with the Steelers, high catch guys, not a very big receiver. So that's not a big issue anymore. You look at the Cooper Kupps of the world who, you know, is a good size player, but just above average athleticism. I mean, he's a high catch guy when he's healthy with the Rams. A lot of it's predicated on offense, but a lot of it's what's coming out in college football nowadays. Those 6'4", 220-pound receivers, a lot of times are made defensive end pass rushers and outside linebackers in college now, or big tight ends as they grow. So college football has changed, and the NFL is now changing with it.
There is a report out that Denver is choosing between Mike Munchak and Vic Fangio. I would imagine there are some people in Denver who are not wildly excited about those two choices. Tell people in Denver why maybe they should be more excited about Mike Munchak than they are.
Munchak is proven to be an excellent offensive line coach, probably the best in the league when he's at that position. Organized, smart, detailed, all-in kind of guy. I mean, he's going to put a staff together. It's going to be a good staff that not only helps what he wants to do on offense, but also he's going to put people around him that can call plays because he's not a play caller, and be a defensive coordinator because he's going to need that in place. You know, I think it's an excellent hire. You know, John Elway, I'm sure, knows Munch, and from their time playing in the league at the same time, Hall of Famers, all that kind of stuff. I think that's an excellent hire. I think he would do good things out in Denver. You know, it's just a matter of getting that quarterback right.
You like the Colts or the Chargers more on the road this weekend?
You know, I like the Chargers. I think it's time for Phillip Rivers. I really do. If Melvin Gordon is healthy, I think that's a big piece. He came back in that game, but they've got a good defense. I thought the Colts played very well on Saturday, but, you know, I do like the Chargers. I'm going to have to go with a real veteran quarterback, even though Luck is considered a veteran, too. Chargers have more playmakers on offense.
Both home teams in the NFC?
I think so, yes.
Blake Bedingfield, you can read his work in the full player-by-player scouting report of the season in review of those players. PaulKuharsky.com is the place to find that. Blake, thank you as always.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.